Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A body is found in a North Portland house fire. The Occupy Wall Street protests are in their 23rd day, and no turkeys will fall on Yellville, Arkansas this year.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, October 10th, 2011. Firefighters found the body of an adult man inside a North Portland home that caught fire early Sunday morning. The fire was reported at 3:48 a.m. at 8001 North Emerald Avenue. When firefighters from Station 26 arrived, they found flames in the attic of the single-family house. Firefighters did a search of the house and found the body on the second floor. Crews pulled the man from the house, but he was pronounced dead on the scene. Other people living in the home were able to get out and did not require medical treatment. The Red Cross is providing shelter for one woman and the family's dog. His name has not been released. Firefighters have not said what caused the fire. This is the second deadly fire to happen in less than a week in Portland. The Occupy Wall Street protests are now in their 23rd day. Hundreds of Occupy Portland protesters who were supporting the Occupy Wall Street protests marched back to Chapman Square Sunday after vacating the place they'd called home for days in support of the Portland Marathon. That march came after organizers reached an agreement with the Portland Marathon this weekend. The deal meant that most of the demonstrators left Chapman Square before the start of the race. Marathon organizers said protesters were respectful of all runners and even proved to be an asset to the largest marathon in Portland history. Event director Les Smith said many volunteered to help us set up and they all wanted to help us pack up and leave. It was really helpful to have them here.
So they're there to protest injustice and rampant unfairness unless it bothers someone, in which case they'll go home and come back later.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They're there to protest the man, but when the man has, like, you know, a marathon scheduled, they're happy to, like, help block off streets and make it easy for them to put on their event.
That really is what I call sticking by your principles. That is intestinal fortitude at its most apexful.
Yes. Among other things, the Occupy Wall Street protests, the demonstrators say they're angry over social and financial inequalities, and what they say is... And what they say on this sheet that I have in front of me, by the way, is corporate greed.
Really?
Yes.
Is that like a sort of like a really angry sort of like, welcome to DuPont Chemical?
Yes. Corporate greed.
Okay.
Heather Gottney, a sociology professor at Fordham University, calls it a movement of movements.
Hold on a second. Somebody's
poopy.
Somebody is, I'm sorry?
A movement of movements. It sounds poopy.
It's going to be one of those days, isn't it?
I have crazy brain today.
Somebody is axing, why is there no sound? I don't know if they mean in sort of universal, like existential
sense, like a sound of one's own destiny or a sound of
Do
one's...
Do they not hear us?
Self-actualization. You know, I can hear me, which is really all I ever care about. I'm presuming you can hear me, which is, that's a close second. As for anybody else, and by anybody else, I mean... John... I don't really know. That's a boggle inside your own brain, or possibly having to do with your cochlea. I'm sorry, this is cut what?
If a man has his computer on and no Legion of News is coming out of it, are we actually doing a show?
Well, it's a waste of technology. That's all I know. I have no knowledge. I'm just going to continue speaking as though everybody is listening with rapt attention to my voice. What cut is this?
This would be Wall Street 1.
Wall Street 1. Much better than Wall Street 2.
I think it's really about grassroots democracy. I think it's about people trying to create ways of expressing themselves politically because they feel that the electoral channels are closed to them.
I think by definition, if you're just standing somewhere, you're not really doing anything politically. I think you're just standing.
Business professor Heshi Gorowitz.
You know, old Heshi Gorowitz and I, the times that we would sit around and talk about Keynesian economics over a plate of lox, I can't even begin to tell you.
Well, Heshi Gorowitz says...
I could just plot with all this protesting.
He says...
You don't know protesting. Now, let me tell you about when Dick Gregory and I were in Chicago in 65. That, my friend, was a protest.
Heshi...
Do you know Alan King...
Heshi Gorowitz says the movement is bigger and more powerful than he ever expected.
I almost don't even want to play this because...
Heshi Gorowitz cannot possibly live up to her expectations.
I should just do all of the Heshi Gorowitz cuts from now on, but okay. Here we go.
It's the 99%ers, it really is.
No, he's so much less interesting.
Let's focus on what divides us. Let's focus on what unites us. That's the way that we can bring about change.
Okay, there you go.
Republican presidential candidate Herman Cain calls the Occupy Wall Street movement a distraction from the Obama administration's record on the economy. Cain calls the protests anti-American.
It's anti-American because to protest Wall Street and the bankers is basically saying that you anti-capitalism. The free market system and capitalism are two of the things that have allowed this nation and this economy to become the biggest in the world.
Thank you, Herman Cain.
I don't know. I'm just back. Like, in my head, the entire time I was just doing more fake Heshi Gorowitz. Cuts. I want to make, like, the fictitious Heshi Gorowitz our correspondents for everything. It doesn't matter. Our correspondent for entertainment, for science news, for news about footwear. Doesn't matter.
Now to our sports reporter, Heshi Gorowitz.
You know, let me talk to you about Sandy Koufax. There was a player.
Now you're just doing...
Larry King. Well, that's because Larry King is always talking about Sandy Koufax.
Yes.
I used to have a soundbite somewhere of Larry King from his. It was so great. It was from the spoken word version of one of his autobiographies. And it was so great. It was like a parody of Larry King, like something he would get. As a Jew, I always root for other Jews. Sandy Koufax. It's so great. It was like, I play that 1,000 times a day. By the way, John... Sabrina from Cascadia.fm has checked in. She says, just checking the stream. Everything fine. Everything is coming through clear. John, your brain is defective. I hate to be the one to...
He can't hear you, though. You'd have to tell him in the text box because he can't hear you because he says there's no sound.
You probably can't hear me.
You're telling him. Well, it's just you. But he can't hear you. Tell him that.
There's nothing wrong with the sound. You can hear me loud and clear right now. The power of Christ compels you. Hey, a guy in the Netherlands can hear us. So, I mean,
that's
it's
right.
Really... If you can't hear us in Gresham... That seems to be that's a geographic problem, I think.
I want to thank our listener and friend Brian, who is on the Twitter as Geek Icon, who mentioned this morning that even though I know that the people at Plaid Pantry are used to seeing everything, I think I startled the guy a little bit this morning with my desperate undercaffeination and my crazy eyes. And Brian wants to say, they're used to dealing with insane meth heads, not articulate, undercaffeinated, awesome.
Okay.
So thank you, Brian, for that. Anyway, continuing with the debate, the Occupy Wall Street protests, they did take a bit of a harsh tone on Friday, with Republican leader Representative Eric Cantor denouncing the demonstrators as mobs and slamming President Obama for allegedly encouraging them. He said, "This administration's failed policies have resulted in an assault on many of our nation's bedrock principles. If you read the newspapers today, I, for one, am increasingly concerned." If you read the newspapers today, he says, I, for one, am increasingly concerned about the growing mobs occupying Wall Street and the other cities across the country.
First of all, it doesn't make any sense. Second of all, he's using like four different styles of tense in that one sentence.
And believe it or not, he says, some in this town have actually condoned the pitting of Americans against Americans.
All right. There's like four places here where his syntactical and logical constructions just fall apart.
Cantor's remarks came a day after President Obama mentioned the protests sympathetically. In a news conference Thursday, he said, I think it expresses the frustrations the American people feel that we had the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression, huge collateral damage throughout the country, and yet you're still seeing some of the same folks who acted irresponsibly trying to fight efforts to crack down on the abusive practices that got us into this in the first place. So, Cantor is the only one who's railing against the demonstrations. Republican presidential candidate.
Israelis are against the demonstrations?
No, he isn't the only one railing against the demonstrations.
Okay.
Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney has called them class warfare and dangerous. And two prominent Democrats, including House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and Representative John Lewis, expressed support for the protesters' message. Lewis drew comparisons to his experience in the civil rights movement. No.
When we marched on Washington 48 years ago, we marched for jobs and freedom. But we spelled it out. We said we wanted a civil rights bill. We said we wanted that bill to contain a ban on discrimination and public accommodation and employment.
Here's what I would like. I would like for us to take a vote right now on the resolution that everyone who was involved in marching for civil rights take like a five-year moratorium on reminding us that they march for civil rights.
Yeah, it's like the guy who goes into 7-Eleven and gets the wrong change and then immediately screams, I was in NOM!
That happened a lot where you are?
Well, when I lived in North Portland, it did.
Okay.
Lewis told CNN there is a reason for the protests.
People are hurting. They're in pain. And they're looking for jobs. They want us to humanize the American government, but also humanize corporate America.
Also, here's the thing. Liberal protesting chicks put out, and that is a scientific fact. There's no getting around that. And so you got to go, look, one has to fish, where the pond is fullest.
And making it clear yet again that most people don't seem to be aware of what this is actually about, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who, by the way, is an independent and a billionaire, said in the New York Post, what they're trying to do is take the jobs away from people working in this city. They're trying to take away the tax base we have because none of this is good for tourism.
I don't understand.
No, I don't think anyone does.
Okay.
I think he was just saying words.
Okay.
And they didn't really necessarily mean anything.
He's just sort of filling up the meter. Somebody just says, you got to play out the string. 35 more seconds.
Just any way you can work the word jobs into your statement. Okay.
No. We'll fix it later. We'll put it all in the correct order later on in post. All right. Hey, I should say, by the way, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, and good afternoon to you. It is Monday, October 10th. 2011. Thank you for joining us. It is, did I say it's Monday? Yes, it's Monday. Coming up later in this hour, your Science in the March, also entertainment news that's coming up at 35 minutes from now. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Geek Watch, Penis Watch, Double Snuff Watch, really?
Double Snuff Watch.
I know half of that. I know half of the Snuff Watch. I don't know the other half.
Oh, then it must be quarter after 12 because someone in the building is microwaving bell peppers.
Yeah, there's something, I gotta tell you, like, it's like 3-4 days in a row. I swear to God, there's somebody they're just microwaving buckets of old diapers in there. No offense to whoever that is. Double Snuff Watch, Geek Watch, Penis Watch coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Also, we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. And from the Oregonian music editor, Ryan White, plus we'll have a recap of last night's season finale of Breaking Bad.
Oh, my God!
Which is titled Face Off. Season 4, episode 13, Breaking Bad, the season finale. We'll talk about that last night.
Oh,
and plus, we will have... I knew this was going to happen. I knew I could make... as soon as I said, Oregonian music editor, Royal World, then immediately I got the thing for sure. Did you get that email from Ryan?
We will have no Ryan White today.
I'm guessing, yes, there is no Ryan today. So, in any event, we may have him on the phone. Did I get it? Did I read it? These are fine points of distinction. Yes, and then probably no to the latter. Also, Sandy Koufax. So that's all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here's Don Taylor.
The 40th annual Portland Marathon took place this weekend with more than 15,000 runners and walkers. One Katrina Coulter, who lives in Calgary, Canada, came down for it. And she said, "We heard it's a beautiful city, and it really is. We got to see most of it, I think, on the run. It was amazing. The weather was perfect." Ian Nurse of Portland took the top spot in the men's race. Hello, Nurse. With a time of 2 hours, 27 minutes, and 39 seconds. Marcy Klimek of Phoenix, Oregon. There's a Phoenix, Oregon in other news. Took the gold in the women's division with a time of 2 hours, 46 minutes, and 28 seconds. The Portland Marathon also saw the largest number of race volunteers in its 40-year history. I'm guessing mostly because so many of them were already camping in the park anyway.
So they were just there.
More than 5,000 people gave their time to help the event run smoothly. The winner of the half marathon was Jacob Kemmer.
What is a half marathon?
I guess that's where you only run half as far.
Well, that's okay. And we have winners for that now.
Yeah.
Okay.
The winner was Jacob Kemmer, and the female winner was Asami Hayashi.
Is there like some sort of a special prize you get just for thinking about like showing up?
Yeah.
Like you ponder it for a while in the morning, and then you decide just to snooze a little longer?
I think if you enter and you actually put the number on yourself and pay the fee, you get a T-shirt. And at that point, you could, I think, literally just walk away and then just wear the T-shirt all year and go, "Yep, I ran the marathon."
That's right. Just do like a Rosie Ruiz thing. Just sort of just show up at the after party and just be like, "Well, it was tough, but I feel like if you're not going to do it for yourself, who are you going to do it for?" Yeah. All right.
Hertz Rental Company is coming under fire after it suspended 34 Muslim employees at one of its Seattle, Washington locations. At issue is praying at work and not clocking out. The workers' union and the employees say their contract doesn't require them to clock out to pray, but Hertz says it's company policy to clock out for breaks. Teamsters representative Tracy Thompson says the contract worked out with the company and employees explicitly states that they don't have to clock out for prayer times.
This is Hertz.
Yeah. Very clearly understood that these individuals would not be required to clock in and out.
Elise Omar was one of those suspended, and he says the move violates the workers' contract.
We actually signed a contract in 2010, which clearly gave us the praying people a mini break, which you clearly do not clock out or clock in to do the prayer.
I missed something like halfway through her. She described themselves as the praying people.
The praying people would get a mini break.
It's like the flower people. This is one of those stories that pisses me off because there's no reason that this should be an argument. There's an answer, it sounds like.
Yeah.
It sounds like somebody signed something and somebody photocopied it and somebody stuck it in a drawer. Just find it and read it. It seems like there's a big lawsuit and a big... regardless of what side one takes in this, it seems like this isn't a matter of opinion. It seems like it's written down somewhere. Just go read it.
Yeah.
For the love of Christ Almighty, or possibly Muhammad.
Which I'm guessing why the rental company office that fired the people is actually, you know, kind of in trouble at the moment because they weren't supposed to.
But see, that also seems unlikely because they've got lawyers there. Like, however much a boob the guy in the head office must be, there are lawyers to make sure that you don't just get your company like hundreds of million dollars in the red by doing something that will get them sued.
Yeah.
So it seems like there's doesn't the HR office have to look and sign up? Especially, let's be honest, if anybody just says, "Hey, tomorrow we're going to be firing 34 Muslims all at once," but I'm sure that nothing will come of that.
No one will notice.
Yeah, there's no reason to believe that that will result in any sort of attention or any sort of an uproar. It seems like there might be one person, at the corporate level who just says, "Ooh, let me just
actually
run
fire,
that up the
flagpole." They suspended them.
Well, you know what I mean, but some sort of a mass action against Muslims.
Yeah.
It seems like there might be a guy who just says, "Let me run that by HR and just kind of see how they feel about that."
Let me pull out the big notebook full of contracts.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, it says here.
Well, Omar believes this is a clear case of discrimination against the praying people.
Well, we think it's about a hatred toward our religion, basically saying that you guys cannot pray without clocking out, which is, again, they're even going against the contract, which we find.
It's just like all the words are rounded off. I can't even hear it. It's just all whistles and static. I got nothing.
I'm not sure she really understands the concept of hatred, really.
It's
more like somebody just going, "Hey, get back to work."
Yeah,
that's
really.
That's not necessarily hatred.
I'm sorry. And every time you just said, introduced it, that's I just kept saying, "Omar coming," in my head, which is not at all the same thing.
I guess I guess there was a sign. Somebody was holding a sign at one of the Occupy something or other protests that said that there was somebody who had a thing like saying, "Corporate greed is kills people" or something. And right next to him, somebody had a homemade sign that just said, "Omar coming."
Really?
Yes.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I saw a picture of it. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's the best thing ever. I would absolutely go to a protest if I could carry that sign. Like, just for the, I mean, it sounds like it's been done, so I don't have to. But just for the purposes of waving that placard, I would totally attend. That's great. Excellent. I got to find me that.
The Baxter Bulletin newspaper in Arkansas reports that attendees at the Turkey Trot Festival in Yellville, Arkansas.
Yellville.
Yes. Were disappointed when no turkeys dropped from planes on Friday or Saturday. The turkey drop is a mainstay of the event in northern Arkansas, although organizers don't sanction it. Supporters say the turkeys can fly just enough to descend safely, but animal rights advocates call it cruel. PETA posted a $5,000 bounty for information leading to an arrest. There is one, I guess, here's the thing is, I was reading about this, I was trying to figure out how it could be sanctioned, unsanctioned, what have you. There is a guy called the Phantom Pilot who flies over the turkey trot and drops turkeys. Apparently, I don't think he's actually part of the organized festival.
He's just some guy?
He just does this every year, and nobody knows who he is, and he calls himself the Phantom Pilot.
Is this like that guy that leaves a red rose on Edgar Allan Poe's grave every year?
Yes. Something like that. Anyway, so yeah, so PETA posted a $5,000 bounty on anybody who was dropping. The FAA had said any pilots dropping turkeys could lose their licenses. So they're kind of cracking down on the turkeys dropping from the sky this year. And there were a number of people actually wearing T-shirts at the festival that said, "I am the Phantom Pilot." And at least one sign someone was carrying offered a $10,000 reward for the arrest of the PETA employee who came up with the $5,000 bounty.
That's great. I like to see that rancor and discord are on the rise in this country.
Yes.
That gives me hope for a better, brighter tomorrow.
But people were sad because no dropping turkeys.
Also, by the way, it's not even November.
No.
I mean, I'm not even saying that we're early for that. I mean, we're early for Halloween at this point. So the idea that you're just going to be hurling birds out of planes, which is a Thanksgiving-themed tradition. It seems like we're way ahead of ourselves.
And let me show you this. I was at Plaid Pantry this morning, and I purchased this simply because it's apparently the first Christmas product of the season has already hit the stores. Peppermint Crunch Junior Mints.
Jesus, no.
But look at that. All red and green, and it's for Christmas. It's October 10th.
Well, you know, at Macy's, they had the Christmas display. They were starting to put Christmas displays up, and I hate to... I'm not trying to be that guy who's like, it comes every year. It's July, Christmas. It doesn't matter to me. I like Christmas. I'm just saying it is one of those things, I think, not just colloquially, but I think in point of fact, not every year, but I would say every couple of years, they do start cranking up when they put that stuff out. Macy's had some of their early Christmas displays out in September. Which is, you know, but by the way, Junior Mints are a thing that nobody really just sits around and eats.
Oh, I like Junior Mints.
Then you are the only person.
My husband likes them. Yeah, they're a good movie.
But that's what I was going to say. They're a thing only eaten, like without movie theaters, nobody would really think about them or buy them. And if you eat them, it's just to replicate the movie theater experience. They are a food only in existence because of theaters.
I think this is the first time I have ever purchased Junior Mints not in conjunction with a movie-going experience.
Exactly.
But still, I had to purchase them because I was just so shocked and appalled that it was already, like, a Christmas thing on October 10th.
Somebody notes the... this is sort of interesting that PETA is complaining about placing birds into the air. That is a little odd now that I think about it.
Well, except that, as we know from WKRP in Cincinnati, turkeys don't fly. So even though the organizers say, well, they can fly enough to descend safely, the fact is they really do mostly just plummet.
Is this that one of the... Mostly. That's when they... From the plane is when they plummet, mostly. Is that one of those things like chickens where they could fly if we didn't, like, cut their wings off or whatever we do to them?
Well, maybe. Wild turkeys can fly short distances, but, like...
Wild turkeys.
But domesticated turkeys, the ones that we grow for food, are just so hugely fat that they can't, like, you know, they can't fly. They I think they can, like, propel themselves maybe over, like, a fence. Because I knew somebody whose uncle had turkeys, and the turkeys would fly over, like, the 4-foot fence, but then they were too stupid to figure out how to get back in, so they just stand on the other side of the fence, gazing mournfully back into where their food was.
Wild turkeys basically just fly to the bathroom floor, in my experience. Yeah.
Columbia County dispatchers said an off-duty sheriff's deputy shot an intruder during a late-night home invasion in the town of Warren. Warren, as we have established before, is that town that's not really actually a town, except I said it wasn't a town and someone got really mad and I got nasty emails. But it's like this little speck in between Scappoose and St. Helens that has like nothing there except for a coffee shop and a church.
I don't even know that I'm familiar with Warren.
Yeah, if you're on your way to St. Helens, like about 5 miles before you get to St. Helens, there's just a sign that says Warren.
It's next to the sign that says Abandon All Hope.
Yeah. Investigators said deputies were called to the home after 11:30 p.m. Sunday. The homeowner called 911 and reported he woke up to find an intruder breaking into his home. The homeowner fired shots and the intruder fled the scene. No one was hurt inside the house, but investigators are trying to figure out whether the intruder was wounded by the gunfire. Deputies and officers from the Scappoose and St. Helens Police Departments, plus a canine unit, searched for signs of where the suspect might have gone. The suspect remains at large, according to investigators. What?
I'm sorry, that was like an excited inhalation you were doing. It was like you were just really ramping up for something thrilling.
Well, I am, because it's time for science.
Really?
And you know what's special about science today?
I don't.
It's sponsored by Squires Electric.
Is it really?
It is.
All right, I thought you were going to say it's because we had that Zinke News Science Man meme.
That too.
All right. When did that happen? Was that Friday?
That was Friday.
Was it Friday during the second show or was it during this show?
I think that was during the second show. So,
all right. By the way, if anybody would like to see the exciting new meme that has been created for Science of the March, you can find that at Quick Meme, just like it sounds. That is quickmeme.com/, and I believe you have to capitalize each letter. I think it might be case sensitive. I'm not sure.
It's all one word and it's not case sensitive.
Because I was trying to type it directly and it was not going there. I was getting maybe it's different. On Friday, I was getting like the 404 thing.
I've got it in here, and it's all lowercase, science man.
Awesome.
Just one word.
Quickmeme.com/scienceman. You can see some of the memes that are being, and you can create your, you can pile on if you like.
You can play along at home.
You can pile your scorn on my narrow, bony shoulders.
In fact, one of the most recent, did you know that I have a shrine to John Munch in my basement? Creepy.
Okay. It's not actually science, sir, ma'am. All right.
No.
Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609. And when you do, say, God bless you, Squires Electric. God bless you, everyone, for sponsoring this year's Science on the March here at Cascadia.fm. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Say, Dad, don't blow off your toes this year when you hook up your Christmas lights and it's put into the same outlet that everything else inside your house and everything else at your neighbor's house who's been siphoning off your electricity and probably your cable, even though you didn't know that, has been powered out of. Don't subject your family to the horror of your smoking ruins being seen on the lawn this holiday season. No. Have Squires Electric come make sure that everything in your house is, is all 220, as they say. It's 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. You can also find them on Facebook if you like. Facebook.com/Squires Electric, proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
Sorry, I just spotted the Science Man thing that is you with your quizzically raised eyebrow. And it says, I wonder, do chickens have lungs? I'm just asking.
I haven't really seen any of those. The only one I saw was the first one that Seamus made. By the way, the chickens have lungs thing is a thing I really asked one time.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's like the thing about can Siamese twins be joined to the hare? That is a thing that Sarah Dillon and I, both of us blindingly ignorant, of course, and like feeding each other's ignorance like some mutually some mutually assured destruction of the brain. We argued about, well, we didn't argue. We pondered it out loud for like 10 minutes. Like, but what if the Siamese twins were conjoined twins where they were joined at the hair? What would you do then? And then finally we just pick up the phones were just like, you know, pulsing with, and we pick it and somebody goes, you'd cut the hair! Move on! And that was it. So that has become like a whole, that has become emblematic of my idiocy.
Well, some troubling news, and not just because it's National Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
It's not.
A computer virus has reportedly infected the U.S.'s Predator and Reaper drones, and network security specialists can't seem to get rid of it. Wired magazine reported on Friday that it's a fascinating story that the virus logs every keystroke as pilots fly unmanned drones remotely overseas from Czech Air Force Base in Nevada. Creech Air Force Base in Nevada. It hasn't hindered overseas missions, and as far as they know, there's been no leak of classified information. But Wired spoke to three anonymous sources about the infection, one of whom had this to say, "We keep wiping it off and it keeps coming back. We think it's benign, but we just don't know."
Maybe some penicillin would knock that out.
So far, they followed removal instructions, posted on the website of the Kaspersky security firm. But the virus kept coming back, a source familiar with the infection says. Eventually, the technicians had to use a software tool called BC Wipe to completely erase the GCS's internal hard drives. This meant rebuilding them from scratch, they said, a time-consuming effort. Although the remote cockpits used by pilots to fly drones aren't supposed to have an internet connection, thereby providing some level of protection against infection, some military specialists are speculating, that the virus stumping the military might be common malware. The drones don't exactly have the most rigorous security protocols. In 2009, insurgents in Iraq were able to capture unencrypted video footage from the drones using a piece of cheap software.
They were using this winky toolbar.
And until the discovery of the virus, Creech was one of the few military locations still using removable hard drives to transfer information between computers.
And let me understand this, that the U.S. government, the military, finally decided that the only way they could get rid of this virus was to use BC Wipe, which is, by the way, freeware that you can just get off the internet, like, anywhere.
And to go online and just Google instructions for how to get rid of a virus.
Hey, don't get any of that crippleware either. I don't want to have to, like, pay $4 next month to keep using this. Just get something totally free. All right.
Well, for a small group of patients with diabetes, a round of maggots is just what the doctor ordered, according to a Reuters article. Participants with limb infections and circulatory problems had 50 to 100 maggots patched to their wounds every 2 days for 10 days or so. Of 37 people with diabetes receiving maggot treatment, 21 had successful outcomes, according to the article, which constituted getting rid of the infection or removing a certain portion of dead tissue from the wound site. 5 patients' wounds were infected with MRSA, which is the flesh-eating, highly resistant bacteria, bacterial strain, which has been difficult to treat in patients in recent years. In these cases, maggot therapy prevented more drastic actions to saving limbs, including amputation. Patients for which treatment wasn't successful had more severe infections to begin with, including more inflammation and bone infections. Maggot therapy remains a controversial area of medicine, mainly because studies have shown mixed results in the treatment success in promoting new tissue growth over traditional methods.
Because it's horrifying.
Well, yeah. With time, however, the insects have shown promise for one aspect of the healing process, debridement, or the removal of dead or infected tissue to allow for healthy tissue to regenerate.
You know, my mom is a nurse, and my mom is old enough to remember when they did this at her hospitals. And so she loved to roll that story out when I would have friends over, or if we were displeasing her at the dinner table, she would occasionally just uncork a, and then we packed his bleeding, pussy wound full of maggots story. And it's like right as I was digging into the cauliflower or something, it was always very, very unpleasant.
But what they're finding is that it obviously, because all they do is just eat dead tissue,
It's
not helping. It doesn't help to encourage treatment of infection. But it's very good for getting rid of bad tissue.
I guess it's that, or they just dump you full of rubbing alcohol. So you probably, you know, the maggots might sting less.
It's a little more tickly, I think, with the maggots.
Yes.
A new book analyzing one of the most spectacular tragedies in American history reveals what the 81 members of the Donner Party ate before resorting to eating each other. On the menu, family pets, bones, twigs, a concoction described as glue, strings, and eventually human remains. The book, titled An Archaeology of Desperation, Exploring the Donner Party's Alder Creek Camp, centers on recent archaeological investigations at that campsite near Truckee, California, where one quarter of the 81 emigrants spent their nightmarish winter of 1846 and 47. No human bone was identified in the fragments analyzed from the extensive bone sample at Alder Creek, but the researchers conclude that some Donner Party members participated in cannibalism during the last week of February 1847. Kelly Dixon, an associate professor in the Department of Anthropology at the University of Montana, and her colleagues are emphasizing the fact that the historical and archaeological sources present a complicated story about humans doing whatever possible, including eating hide and strings, as well as consuming their dogs, before making the desperate decision to cannibalize.
Now, if they didn't find any bones, how do they know that? I mean, I really don't know much about the Donner Party. I just know enough to make jokes about it. That's pretty much it. I don't really know.
Well, this is one of the campsites, so this might not be a campsite where they actually found. They did say they found hair, bones, skulls, and stuff around the fire.
Okay.
So I don't know. But at any rate, the historical record consisting of letters and journals kept by members of the Donner Party and rescue groups. And can you imagine, like, being...
Dear Diary.
Yeah. Being, like, starving to death and dying and freezing, and you're still, like, working. You're still... Day 23. Had to eat my own shoe. I really think... I guess maybe it keeps your mind off things.
I think that's pretty much priorities are. Also, I concur with the people who've noted that I would really, you know, I'd go for eating the people before I go to the dog.
Probably.
Yeah.
According to the records in the journals and the memories of some survivors, the trapped members first ate all of their animals, including captured mice and the family dogs, as well as wild game. Of the family dog, Cash, emigrant Virginia Reed Murphy wrote, "We ate his head and feet, hide everything about him." Another member of the group, Patrick Breen, reportedly shot his dog and dressed its flesh. The Donner's dog, Uno, itself hungry enough to eat a child's shoe, may also have been consumed. Then, when the meat gave out, the emigrants turned to the hides of the slaughtered animals, which, when scraped, cut into strips, and boiled, yielded a thick glue.
It's a real pick-me-up, Don.
Yeah,
thanks.
I know.
Why didn't you save this for the Cannibal Watch?
Oh, because I have an actual cannibal story for Cannibal Watch.
Well, this is an actual cannibal story.
This is science. Science!
You can't... Okay. Wait, do
that again. Anthropology.
Say that again.
Science!
All right, okay.
Okay. We'll move on to something else. Scientists are using a cloning technique to create the type of customized stem cells that show promise for treating disease. The newly created stem cells have too much genetic material, unfortunately, to function properly. They include DNA from two people, not just the patient the cells were meant to match. Scientists still have to figure a way around that before they can use the cells to develop genetically matched tissue for transplant to treat various diseases. The research involving injecting DNA from skin cells of a volunteer... let's start this over. The research involved injecting DNA from skin cells of a volunteer into donor eggs. Normally in cloning, the egg's genetic material is removed first, but when researchers tried that, it didn't work. So the new method only worked when the donor's DNA was left inside the egg and the volunteer's genetic material was then added to it. This meant the result had 69 chromosomes, which is 23 too many. Because of that, researchers say they couldn't imagine that these cells could make a viable human being. That's simply out of the question. However, the researchers are not trying to clone a human. They just want to produce stem cells. This fellow, Dieter Egli, from the New York Stem Cell Foundation, said he and his colleagues are trying several different approaches to overcome the technical barrier of too much DNA in the stem cells. What's important, he said, is that it shows researchers can use the method to turn a person's own cells into potent stem cells, something that has been demonstrated before in animals.
It's just like how you can bank your own blood at the blood bank?
Yeah, maybe.
Like I could just be... dropping off my DNA.
Or you just say, wow, I need some stem cells. And somebody say, here, have some egg. Grow. Then you could grow like some kind of a mutant animal in a lab that would have all of the different stem cells you would need to cure yourself of something.
That's exactly what you should do. You should grow them all inside a mutant animal. Don't just put them in the freezer. Whatever you do, don't just like stick them in a bag and chill them. Grow them inside some horrific, like zebra spider cow.
Yes.
Yes. And just
that's what I would do.
Keep it penned up out back. That's a great... Great idea. I'm going to put you in charge of that whole project.
And finally, Barbie dolls will soon be wrapped in more than just a mind-boggling array of clothing styles. Barbie and other Mattel toys will soon be sold in more ecologically responsible packaging. By the end of 2011, the U.S.-based toy titan Mattel plans to use recycled material or sustainable fiber for 70% of its paper packaging. They hope to boost that number to 85% by the end of 2015. Mattel Vice President Lisa Marie Bongiovanni said in a statement, "We are committed to advancing the use of sustainably sourced paper and wood fiber across our business, beginning with packaging." Mattel's decision came after months of pressure from Greenpeace, an international environmental activism organization, to stop using products from Asia pulp and paper. Greenpeace's website states that Asian pulp and paper are responsible for rampant destruction of the Indonesian rainforest. Mattel recognized it couldn't allow its supply chains to include products coming from deforestation, and the toy packaging shouldn't come at the cost of rainforest and tiger habitat, said a statement on Greenpeace's website.
We grow trees in America. We've got...
Yeah.
We're full of trees.
Yeah.
Do they think there are no trees anywhere else? They think that the trees are just... The trees come from... That we have to get them from Endor? They just have to be brought here by
I'm imagining they're cheaper.
Okay.
They're cheaper right. trees.
It seems like they could grow their own trees, even if they really wanted to. I'm just saying, what are they going to... What is it going to be packaged in instead? Like the box is made of trees now.
Recycled material or sustainable fiber, which means stuff that...
Trees are sustainable.
Well...
Oh, for the love of God.
All right.
A tree is a... Okay, fine, fine, fine. That's like, you know, people who say that trees aren't somehow sustainable, that's like saying carrots aren't a sustainable crop. I don't know. The thing about growing corn is it's not sustainable. Of course it is. You grow some, next year you grow more. It sustains itself. Jesus God. I mean, look, I don't have, as I think many people might know, like a complete grasp of scientific theory, but even I understand what something means when you can grow more of it. Whatever. Fine.
So to make their point and to get Mattel's attention, Greenpeace had two ad campaigns. One, in one they staged a breakup between Ken and Barbie via Twitter. And in another, they posted images of Barbie cutting down the rainforest with a chainsaw.
Okay, that's pretty great, though. I appreciate that. All right, is that the end of science?
Science!
Oh, there you go. Rick Emerson in The End of Science. There's your Science on the March brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. You can also go to Facebook if you like, facebook.com/squireselectric. While you're there, if you would click the like button, you'll be a better person for it, and an angel somewhere will get a brightly speckled pair of shoes. That is facebook.com/squiresElectric. Proud sponsors of that, your Science on the March. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news and next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program today. Geek Watch, Penis Watch, and a double snuff watch, as well as Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek and a recap of last night's episode of Breaking Bad, Season 4, Episode 13, the season finale. Here is Don Taylor.
Seven people spent 20 hours floating in choppy seas off the Florida Keys before a commercial fisherman spotted their capsized pleasure boat, according to the U.S. Coast Guard. The commercial boat rescued three men clinging to the overturned craft and alerted the Coast Guard, which found a four-year-old girl and three women holding on to a floating cooler on Sunday. An 80-year-old woman was missing and presumed drowned. Petty Officer Nick Amin said, "Treading water for just 1 hour is challenging, to say the least, but when the will to live kicks in, human beings can do amazing things." Lieutenant Kara Levin said that the boaters weren't wearing life jackets when their craft capsized
off
of Long Key in wavy, rainy waters on Saturday afternoon. Amin said the weather is not favorable at all for boating over the weekend. It's also pretty amazing that the group was able to tread water for so long in those rough seas. The child and a couple of other boaters were taken to Fisherman's Community Hospital in Marathon, Florida. Calls to the hospital were not returned. The child was suffering from hypothermia. The identities of the boaters had not been released.
I don't get the whole thing about being atop a huge, huge, seemingly endless chasm filled with water and then just deciding you're not going to wear a life jacket. Like, really, unless it's unless wearing the life jacket is just going to mean that you're slowly whittled away by sharks, which granted is sometimes the case. I don't really see the upside there.
I think it's if you're on a biggish boat, it's that false sense of security like people have when they drive SUVs.
Oh no!
Like
no.
You just think you're sort of impervious because you're in something that feels stable.
I just read this story. I don't know, it was a couple days ago. They said that over the last 4 years. 150 people have vanished from carnival-type cruise lines, and they have no idea why.
Yeah.
They just don't know where any of them went. They're just gone. Just gone. They just they went to places unknown.
If you were going to kill a guy, though, that would be, like, a great way to do it, is follow him on board his cruise and then just wait for an opportunity to just knock him overboard.
Ted, look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roald Dahl wrote a great story about that. I forget what it's called, but he in the Roald Dahl omnibus, there's a great story about a murder on board a cruise line. Not that you should do that sort of a thing.
No.
Here is Don Taylor at the desk of news.
Republican Congressman Paul Ryan slammed President Obama on Sunday on Meet the Press when asked about the jobs bill that Obama has been vigorously pushing in speeches, press conferences, and appearances, mostly in battleground states. The House budget chairman said Republicans have a difference of opinion with the president when it comes to creating jobs.
"We don't think doubling down on failed stimulus policies, which have already proven to fail, is the right way to go. So we want to work with ideas that have proven to work. That means helping small businesses grow. That means getting certainty on our policy, regulations, taxes, debt, so that small businesses can grow."
See how he tried to speak the common man's language there by saying you shouldn't double down.
Right.
That's
because regular folks play poker.
That's right. That's what they do, Don.
They also drink beer.
Exactly.
Ryan said Republicans are trying to work with the president.
"We've passed over a dozen pieces of legislation, jobs legislation, that are all sitting over in the Senate. We passed a budget to pay off the debt to get the economy growing. We passed energy reform. We passed regulatory reform, small business tax relief. We've passed so many different jobs bills throughout this year that are sitting over in the Senate. Here's the deal. We have a difference of opinion with the White House on how best to create jobs.
Boy, that's a really, really uninteresting clip. I won't comment on that. I will, in fact, just say that this is prompted by the whole doubling down comment in the first cut, although it's a different card game. I'd like to give a little shout-out to my hot wife, who, while playing poker last night at a local card-porium, schooled a guy who then, as he was leaving the table, turned and shouted back over his shoulder, "I'm actually a very good player!" on his way to the door. There you go.
Convincing no one.
Yes, yes. He did also, as he was on the verge of going out, as he was becoming increasingly short-stacked, he gave her apparently the hard stare at one point and noted that he did a lot of MMA in his spare time.
Yeah.
So just FYI.
So and that has what to do with poker exactly?
Also losing. That's the other thing he does in his spare time, I guess. Here's Don Taylor.
A man accused of stealing socks and underwear led police on a foot chase before he was caught hiding beneath a trash bin. And then he was arrested for the 100th time. Joseph Wilson, who turned 50 this year, reached his milestone Thursday in, yes, Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Of course.
According to an arrest affidavit, Wilson walked out of the Beals department store with the merchandise under his clothing. When a loss prevention officer tried to confront Wilson, he jumped into a waiting minivan and ordered the driver to take off. Wilson's friend didn't take off, so the suspect hustled out the other side of the vehicle and ran away. The officer lost him, but a witness called police a short time later to say Wilson was in the bushes in the Wendy's parking lot just down the road.
Wait, his whole thing was just to get in and say, take off, and the guy went, no, and he went, all right. And then he just scampered, and then he continued through the other side and left.
Yeah.
And then just hid in some shrubs.
Yes.
After 100, well, I guess after 99 arrests, he hadn't gotten any further than hide behind some nearby greenery.
When two officers arrived and found Wilson, the sweaty suspect first said he was out for a jog and was just trying to cool off behind the trash bin. Eventually, he cited hard times and was taken into custody without any further struggle. The merchandise he was accused of stealing was worth $174.
That's just sad.
Prior to Thursday, Wilson had a record that included 37 felony arrests, 47 misdemeanors, and 15 others. In all, he's been convicted in 35 of those incidents.
He was just sweaty, so he was cooling off behind a trash bin where all of us
jogging. Go. I was jogging. That's why I'm sweaty.
That's where we all relax, is nearby a dumpster.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday, October 10th, 2011, here at Legion of News on Cascadia.fm.
Zsa Zsa Gabor's husband says the 94-year-old actress is resting after undergoing an operation at a Los Angeles hospital where she's being treated for an infection. Frederick Prince von Anhalt said Sunday that doctors at UCLA Ronald Reagan Medical Center successfully reattached a tube in Gabor's stomach that became loose and led to bleeding. The celebrity socialite was rushed to the hospital on Saturday. Van Anhalt said Gabor could be sent home within a few days.
I swear to God she died last year. I thought we had that story.
No, she won't die.
Okay.
She will not die.
All right.
He says doctors are waiting for antibiotics to take effect for the infection. He calls his wife a fighter and says he's very optimistic. Gabor has been hospitalized repeatedly since falling out of bed and breaking her hip in July of last year, and she had a leg amputated in January.
I think every year, here's what we have to do. We have some panel that gets, everybody talked about Obamacare and the death panel. We really ought to have an actual death panel that gets together, and they just look at the relative ages of people who are, you know, past, I don't know, past 50 or 65 or 70 or something. And when you see a guy like, you know, Steve Jobs trending downward, you see somebody like Jim Henson not doing so well, you know, at death's door. And then you look around and you go, you, Vagoda, you, Gabor, and you, give me a third one. Nah, I've totally failed.
Yeah, no.
I'm just saying, like, doesn't she have stem cells?
Yeah.
Well, let's take them. Let's just go get them right now.
Just fabulous Hungarian stem cells that apparently will not die.
They're just sitting there like cellular tulips waiting to be harvested.
Well, if you've ever wanted to sit on it, the Fonz's iconic motorcycle from Happy Days is hitting the auction block next month.
Did you really start with, if I really want to sit on it?
Yes.
Okay.
You can thank TMZ for that. They're the ones who wrote
it. Okay.
The 1949 Triumph Trophy TR5 hasn't been ridden since the show ended in 1984, and for the last 15 years it's been gathering dust in a motorcycle shop. Auctioneers expect the bike to fetch in the $90,000 range because it doesn't, and it doesn't run anymore, and the speedometer is broken. But hey, the funds wrote it.
I don't want to be pedantic about this, but on what are they sitting? Not in this story, but in the colloquial usage of the phrase.
Sit on it.
Yeah. What are they sitting on?
I don't know. Well, doesn't it come from the thing of, like, you'd give someone the finger and say, sit on it and rotate?
That seems like it'd be way worse for you than it would for them.
Yeah.
Depending on who it is.
Yeah.
I mean.
And then it just got, I think, it sit on it is just sort of a shortening of that.
It's like when Paul Stanley's saying, lick it up, and it's never really clear contextually about what he's speaking. I was never, as a kid, for some reason, as a kid, I always, it always seemed to me somehow as though it ended with somebody sitting on someone else's, head or something, but I don't know why I thought that. And that doesn't really make sense in retrospect, but none of the other explanations really make sense either, unless it is some sort of shorthand predicated on your knowledge of the entire phrase, I guess the beginning of which is some sort of a reference to one's middle finger.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, there's a great Louis C.K. bit that he does where he extrapolates on a fellow in traffic yelling at him to suck a bag of dicks.
Yes.
And then trying to figure out...
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Well, you know. But yes, trying to figure out, it's like, how exactly that works.
You have to do them all one at a time.
Where did the bag come
en
from?
Masse.
What sort of a bag is it?
How long does it take to gather a bag?
Yeah. Jurors who have sat facing Dr. Conrad Murray for 2 weeks listened Friday as the physician detailed in a recorded interview his interactions and treatments on the Michael Jackson in the months and hours before the singer's death. Murray sounded calm on the more than two-hour recording as he spoke of their relationship, efforts to save his life, and the medications he gave Jackson in his efforts to get him to fall asleep.
Well, of course. Ball peen hammer.
Just go to sleep!
Chloroform-soaked rag, a nail gun.
It was the first time Murray's interview with police detectives has ever been played in public. The June 27, 2009 interview outside a noisy hotel ballroom gave police their first hint that Jackson's death was not from natural causes and that he had been given the powerful anesthetic propofol in an effort to cure his extreme insomnia. He's not able to sleep naturally, Murray told the detectives early in the interview.
I'm not really surprised that he's calm during the interview. I mean, imagine how many drugs that guy must squirrel away for himself all the time. That really is like a one for you, two for me kind of a deal, I think, there. Because you must know when you're taking care of Michael Jackson, whether he's dead or not on any given day, that is a bit of a stressful... I mean, trying to keep that guy asleep and then alive, I mean, those are two things. Those are plates that don't spin in the same direction.
You prescribe for him a bottle of 500-something, and then like 300 actually go to the bedside.
Exactly, yeah. No, that's skimming from the till.
Legendary piano virtuoso Roger Williams has died at the age of 87, and he's not even one of our two Snuffwatch people.
I saw that last night. I don't know who he is.
Oh, there were a whole bunch of... If you remember, in like the late 70s, there were a lot
of... a Floyd Kramer type guy?
Yeah, yeah. He was very famous for like covering Born Free and the theme from Dr. Zhivago. And there used to be these all... Legendary pianist Roger Williams plays the hits for you, and then you'd see him like, and it's all kind of like candlelit and smoky, and there'd be a close up of his hands, and it's the kind of records your grandma bought.
So it is, yeah. It's like he's the Roger Whittaker of the piano.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Juilliard trained musician scored a massive hit in 1955 with "Autumn Leaves," which remains the only piano instrumental to reach number one on the Billboard pop chart. In all, the prolific Williams recorded more than 100 albums and became famous in his later years for playing marathon 12-hour-long concerts. He also performed for every commander-in-chief from Harry Truman to George H.W. Bush, earning him the nickname Pianist to the Presidents.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have laughed at that. That was really beneath me and everyone and all of us. Jesus. Okay.
Paul McCartney and New York businesswoman Nancy Chevelle were married in a ceremony at the Old Marylebone Town Hall in London today. The former Beatles, 69, and Chevelle, 51, began dating 4 years ago and got engaged this past May. It's the third marriage for McCartney, who divorced Heather Mills in 2008. His first marriage to Linda McCartney lasted 29 years until her death from cancer in 1998.
Some people never learn.
Monica Jessen from People Magazine reports the event was kept under the radar with only a few signs that it was happening.
Let's see, this is McCartney.
We've seen lots of coming and going at their house. Amazing attention to detail, lots of flowers. They're constructing this huge marquee. So I think it's going to be a very intimate, personal affair, but, you know, lots and lots of attention to detail.
This is going to be like a monetary Zeno's paradox. If I keep giving away half of my money every single year, exactly how long will it take me to get to zero? Never.
Well, again, he's 69, so, you know. Anyway, his 7-year-old daughter Beatrice served as flower girl. Guests included Ringo Starr and his wife Barbara Bach, George Harrison's widow Olivia, and Chevelle's cousin Barbara Walters.
Okay.
Barbara Walters, a cousin. And today's date, by the way, just wanted to make sure this is today and not yesterday.
Is this a today in history sort of a...
Well, I'm trying to figure out if this was, if they actually got married yesterday or if they got married today. And yeah, it was yesterday that they got married. And it was also the day that John Lennon would have turned 71.
Okay.
So, and finally, fresh off parting ways with ESPN, Hank Williams Jr. has written a new song, taking aim at both the Sports Network and the Fox News show in which he made his controversial comments that landed him in hot water.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it a new song or is it a twist on one of his old songs? Because that's his thing lately, is to take his old songs and to ruin them for me by the making them about Sarah Palin.
I don't know. Since he wrote it in like a day and a half, I assume that it's going to be... I guess it's got a dirty word in it, but I just keep getting... It's called I'll Keep My... and then dot, dot, dot. So I don't know if that's the name. It's just I'll Keep My...
Schlong.
Or if it's I'll Keep My Hat. I'll Keep My... I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, it's expected to go on sale on iTunes today or tomorrow. Williams doesn't reserve his harsh words only for ESPN, which yanked his Are You Ready for Some Football theme song from Monday Night Football after he invoked the name of Adolf Hitler when talking about President Obama. According to the Associated Press, in the song, Williams says Fox and Friends host twisted his words. So in the lyrics, he says, so Fox and Friends want to put me down, ask for my opinion, twist it all around. Well, two can play that gotcha game, you'll see.
Okay.
Williams has begun selling Hank Jr. for President t-shirts on his website and has a number of upcoming media appearances planned, including one on The View tomorrow.
There was an interesting comment that somebody made because he made that, you know, and don't get me wrong, Hank Williams Jr. is one of those guys that I think for the majority of my life I would have... What am I trying to say? It's not even that for a majority of my life I would have said that I'm a Hank Williams Jr. fan. It's that I am a Hank Williams Jr. fan when looking at a narrowly and now increasingly narrowly defined section of his career. But he's, you know, he is one of those guys that, like, years and years and years ago, you think that somebody somewhere who had enough influence or sway over him would have just taken him aside and just, well, don't say anything directly yourself. Just, you know, you're a man of mystery, so just don't speak ever, like, at all about a man. Just let me talk for you. Just run it by me and all, you know. Because he made that, you know, statement. He said that idiot thing about, well, they're stepping on the toes of my First Amendment rights or whatever. And there was a guy, a First Amendment expert at law firm Baker Hostetler said ESPN is, quote, a private company which does not have to use a tone-deaf politico to sing and do its kickoffs. So there
like
you go.
That.
Yeah, I don't see the. I was still looking for the name of the song, and I don't see it anywhere.
Yeah, I'll keep my dot dot dot. So
well,
I'm not sure if there's another word there.
If it makes any difference, I don't actually care. I guess.
No. So do we have time for one more?
We have 45 seconds. Here.
Okay. Netflix is abandoning its splitting off into two different
already
sections. Yes.
So wait, are they going to keep the Quickster name?
I don't know what they're going to do, but a month ago they said they were going to split the DVD rental business off to a new website called Quickster, which investors saw as a good move, and it sent their stock up $8.63, like, immediately. But then all of the customers, like, didn't like it. Lots of people were very upset about it, and a lot of people just sort of canceled outright. So the CEO, Reed Hastings, said in a blog post, it's clear that for many of our members, two websites would make things more difficult. So we are going to keep Netflix as one place to go for streaming and DVDs.
Somebody doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So analysts saw this as a way of Netflix to distance itself from the older DVD business, which has less of a future than internet streaming. They were going to, like, go that direction. Even with this morning's announcement and their pre-market bounce, their shares of their stock have still just been in the toilet ever since they announced this price.
Well done, Netflix. There you go. And with that, we end this another exciting episode of Legion of news. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We will see you next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Until then, we thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionOfNews.com, and take it with you on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?